Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored and really delighted to share the microphone with truly interesting people. These are people who are entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, coaches, business owners. They may be virtual assistants or web developers, and they have wonderful stories to share. And they are also really excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome back to the program executive coach, consultant, and best-selling author Libby Gill. Libby was here, oh gosh, I'll have to look it up, Libby, but it's been a long time, way too long. Now, long time. Libby helps organizations like Disney, ABC, GoDaddy, Kellogg's, Microsoft, Nike, Oracle, PayPal, we all know who that is, Royal Caribbean, Safeway, and Wells Fargo to create cultures of bold leadership that inspire their employees to really consistently deliver brand excellence. And she's the former head of communications for Universal, Sony, and Turner Broadcasting. Excuse me. Libby is also the founder and CEO of executive coaching and consulting firm Libby Go & Company. She's also, I'm making myself tired, an international speaker and best-selling author of 4 books, and she has shared her success strategies on CNN, NPR, The Today Show, and in Business Week, Time, The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and more. Now, sooner or later, every individual and organization gets stuck. It's just part of the human condition. But you don't have to make stuck your normal state. And today, Libby is here to discuss the powerful link between emotion and action so we can understand why we often get in the way of our own success, guilty, and why you can what you can do to change that pattern forever. And by the way, if you're listening to us right now, please do join us in the chat room. We're broadcasting live. And once the episode has rendered, I guess, you will also be able to download it on demand as well as listen to it in iTunes. Libby, I'm so glad to have you back. Thank you for coming
on.
Thank
you. Oh, Denise, so happy to be here. And I have to tell you, I could just listen to your voice all day.
Oh.
It just makes me feel good.
Oh, thank you.
So even though I've already exhausted you by reading that, hey, if you stick around long enough, you get to do a lot of different things.
This is true. You know, it's so funny that, and I'm probably giving away a bit of my age, but it used to be people say, oh, you've got the sexiest voice. Now I hear, oh, your voice is so soothing. It's like, what the heck happened?
No, I think those go hand in hand. I didn't want to get sexist on you, but yes, absolutely. I just want to, you know, I just kind of feel like I want to put on a warm blanket and just lie back and listen.
So. Oh, well, my work here is done. Thank you. So
exactly, right.
You are so sweet. But listen, you are one of my favorite people in terms of becoming an author. I've read all of your books. And, I mean, you have got some phenomenal things to say. And getting unstuck, I think, is it's a big, big thing for all of us. We all do it. I'm guilty. And not just once. I mean, I get stuck all the time. So
yeah,
I can't hear it. Yeah, I can't wait to hear your advice today. So today we're talking about, and I'm raspy today, so sorry. We're putting your business and yourself on the fast track. So before we get started, tell people a bit about yourself and anything that I missed in the intro, and then we are off and running.
Okay, well, you covered a lot of territory. I spend most of my time coaching executives and entrepreneurs, which I dearly love. I do a lot of brand work as well, and just opened a video division because I see that it's really taking off. So I have brought on a wonderful team member who is a former or current documentary maker, but former BBC person, and she is really building that side of the business. It's really fun to see that new piece flourish. So that's quite exciting. And I do a lot of speaking, as you mentioned. I speak to a lot of organizations. One particular passion is talking to women about leadership, and not as a title, not even as a discipline, but as a mindset. And I really love to talk about that because I think that is just so needed today. You know, if the playing field were even, and there's plenty of data and evidence to show us that we're not quite there, then we probably wouldn't need to focus on that. But I'd love to give women shortcuts and secrets, and not to exclude men. We'll take all the enlightened men along the way that we can. But that's what I spend my time doing, working on a new book and just kind of doing what I do. And the latest, and I'll tell you about that as we talk, is an online course, which was something you are very good at, and that's harnessing technology. But for me, it was a new endeavor.
You know, I remember we talked about that some time ago. I'm so glad that you're doing it.
Oh, that's so funny, because people will say, I had somebody, after I wrote my first book, I had somebody, a producer that I'd worked with when I was in the television business, and she called me. I hadn't spoken to her in years. She said, I remember when we had lunch, it's probably 5 years ago, and you told me you were going to write a book. So there's something about putting out there what you want to do, and letting it come to fruition. It doesn't have to happen overnight. In fact, it rarely does. But I probably said that because I thought, well, you know, speaking it makes things happen. And it not only sort of holds you accountable to that, not that you can't back off or course correct or change direction altogether, but I do think there's something magical about sharing your dreams.
Oh, no kidding. Listen, I think we discussed this at one time. I keep a digital journal because I cannot write as fast as my brain can fire off.
Yeah, right, right.
I just can't. And, you know, I posted all over Facebook. I killed off a mouse yesterday. My keyboard is sitting in the corner in timeout. You know,
yeah.
I have to replace those about twice a year.
Oh, I know what you mean. I feel like my fingers think that's where the speed comes through my hands.
They do. And I actually type in my sleep. Do you ever catch yourself waking up and you're drumming on
No. Like,
oh,
that I don't do, but I have some pretty wild dreams in terms of, oh, you got to do this, got to do that.
I do that too. But my point for mentioning the digital journal is, and I love that you say you can, you know, put it out there and course correct as needed. I can go back into this particular journal, which resides on my desktop, and I can do a meta keyword search. I can do a date search. So everything that I have thought of or planned on that maybe didn't get done, I can go back 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years and go, now might be the time.
Yeah.
Or, you know what,
that
was a great idea, or that was stupid. So you just never know.
Well, you can also look at what prompted it. What was your state of mind then? What was going on in your life that made you think it was a great idea? And
exactly.
I'll tell you, I hadn't planned to talk about this, Denise, but I had a long-held personal dream, and that was to write a novel, because I've always been a writer professionally in some capacity. And early on in my life, I sold a couple, or I should say, I got a couple of screenplays optioned, not enough to be career-making, but enough to kind of whet the appetite of telling stories. And then it became much more expedient to be a nonfiction writer and sort of put my thoughts about the business world and also sort of the journey of work and life into my books. And, you know, I thought, well, gee, I'll have to put that on the back burner. But it always stayed in the back of my head. I had 3 or 4 different ideas. And last night, finally when I turned a certain age that had a zero attached, I thought, well, this is my year. I can devote just enough time and I can do this. I can write a novel. So I thought, as with everything, I'm going to set myself up for success. So I took a writing course at UCLA. I skipped the first 3 levels. I thought I might as well start with the serious people, put myself at that level, took a summer course, kind of handpicked some people that seemed like they were on the same journey and really dedicated and wanting to make things happen. And after the course finished, we formed a group, a writer's group, and we've been together 2 years, and I just finished that novel. And I read my last page last night to my group.
Really?
Yeah, and it was one of those things that I've thought about for years, but the timing wasn't right. You know, it's just like,
I just can't.
It doesn't make sense to devote time and energy to this now, but it will eventually. And it was the same way with creating an online course, but it's just what you say. It's that digital journal. Mine happens to be old school. I write in those little speckled composition books that kids use.
I have a ton of those. In fact, my cat Henderson is laying on one right now.
Yeah, and I find that I can write on the right-facing page, just stream of consciousness flow, particularly when I'm feeling stuck, because that way it does come out of the hand when you're a writer. And then when I remember something or I need to find something or a title jumps into my head or an idea, I put it on the left-hand page so that when I flip through, it's not as easy as a metasearch like you do, but when I flip through, there you know, maybe one or two words on the left hand page, so I can pretty much always find what that idea was that I isolated.
And you also have the opportunity when you're going through that notebook and other notebooks to go, ha-ha, what in the world? Oh, now's the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's something about the written word or just kind of putting it out there and having other people help you be accountable to really make you focus and come back to things that maybe the time wasn't right, and that happens all the time. But now that it is right, you're like, okay, now I'm ready. And there's just something very empowering about that.
Absolutely. And I think I work with, as you do with entrepreneurs that feel like, I've got to do it all. You know, the ideas keep rushing, and you just can't. And I'm forever saying, pick your lane. You've got to really focus on what's truly important, what you want to accomplish, because you really can't do everything. And then you've really got to hone in on how am I going to simplify the pathway to getting that done? Because there are always going to be obstacles. But if you identify this is what could trip me up, then you can determine how you're best going to get around and past that.
Well, you know, Libby, one of the big things that gets me stuck, and I'll be very frank about it, is perfectionism. I like to say that I'm a recovering perfectionist. I'm lying. It ain't true. Not even close to true. And it trips me up every stinking day, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got. I think that that's, not that you don't know this, Denise, but I think you got to dig down and say, why do I have to be perfect? What is that assumption that I, of all people, because not everybody feels that way, what is it about me that makes me feel, and where did this come from, and do sort of that self-excavation, and then just flip it around and say, okay, I can be excellent. That's going to be good enough. I could be an A-minus, and I'm going to be okay with that.
Oh, you just struck me through the heart.
Oh.
No, it's okay.
A-minus, not
have...
feeling good?
No. But
no.
You know, the funny thing is, and I make a joke, it's fine, actually. I make a joke about this. I have what is basically called panda blood in some countries. I'm A negative, Rh negative. So I'm already at the A minus, so I can work from there. That will be my touchstone.
I am A positive, and the only way I remember that is I always think, I am A positive person. So, yeah, that's so funny that we may be two of the only people that actually know our blood type.
Oh, I have to. I have to store my own blood. But so why do we get stuck? I mean, perfectionism, there's no question, is a big one. But when you're talking with people and coaching people and doing all of the research that you do, what are some of the, you know, maybe top three, top four or five reasons that people get stuck?
Well, I think the fundamental reason we have to go back to our biological hardwiring is just our sheer engineering of our survival instinct. We get stuck because we go the tried and true path, and that's why we're here on the planet today. We, you know, the amygdala, the primitive part of our brain that has changed the least over time, triggers that fight or flight response that we all know, where we get the sweaty palms and the racing heart and all of that stuff happens, which is good for us. I mean, we need that early warning system. But if we believe that it's always accurate, then we're telling ourselves a mistruth. That was meant to save us from, you know, predators and fires and those sorts of things, not from standing up and saying what we think at a meeting or on a sales call, but our brain responds the same way. So how this manifests for people, is, like you said, is perfectionism. Another thing I think I see a lot is this sort of impulsiveness that we just don't discipline ourselves to either turn off our social media or our voicemail or our email and really devote the time that we need to get done what we've done. It's structure and discipline, I think, that a lot of us have a hard time with. And so it is that need for impulse, for perfectionism, also a need to respond immediately. We live in this world where, ooh, somebody emails me at 1 a.m. I mean, I'm forever asking people if they still, do you really sleep with your cell phone on your pillow? And, you know, show of hands, and lots of people do. Yes,
I don't.
Put it
Mine
on
is in the car.
I'm so proud.
Right. Mine is either
I don't
in the car.
I want to wake my partner.
Right, or at the bottom of my purse, or, you know, on one notable occasion in the crisper drawer in the refrigerator.
Oh,
I'm not attached
good.
To mine. Yeah, I didn't find it for 2 days. It was stuck in a bag of cherries.
You know, that's when you know the stress is creeping in, when you start.
Well,
yeah,
but I when I first got a cell phone all those years ago, I knew I was never going to be attached to it. In fact, there may be but 5 or 7 people in the whole world that have my cell phone number. I just don't give it out. It's the one place I don't allow people to bug me.
Oh, good for you. So you intentionally stuck it away somewhere. I think that's great. People are shocked that I can happily turn off my phone and my sound. I've got 2 kids, so I can't always, you know, I always check to see if it's from them. But when I know they're busy in class, safe, protected, I don't have to worry about it. But yes, I think it's vital in this world where we're just, you know, we get the 24/7 bombardment of information that you've got to protect yourself a little bit.
Well, Libby, doesn't it change your brain? I mean, doesn't there come a point where all of this information actually changes how you're thinking, how you're operating?
Well, it's really interesting. There are a couple schools of thought, and as you know, I'm not an MD. I just pretend to be a neuroscientist and really love to read the studies. There is some evidence that we rewire our brains by, you know, our neural pathways by repetition, by doing things over and over. And then there's another school of thought, and this is fascinating, is that the only thing that really slows down the aging, that rewires our brain, that heals us, is daily exercise. So there is an argument to be made for taking that 30-minute walk. It does not have to be a punishing workout at the gym, which I can't claim that I'm a gym nut, but I do try to get in a 30-minute something every day. And it's really interesting that alone seems to have the biggest impact on our brains.
Oh, I don't doubt that a bit. Look, I have a gym in my home. It's in my garage. But my favorite piece of equipment, honestly, is outside on the back porch.
Yeah.
I've got a covered porch and an open porch, and it's a rebounder. And I'll get out there, and I'll bounce around on that thing like I'm a happy little kid. And my Maine Coon Jack, he's on there with me, and we're bouncing, and I think it helps him, too.
He jumps with you.
Yeah, he does. But, you know, when I get stuck or I just get exhausted, my eyes are tired, or I find I'm shallow breathing if I'm monitoring myself, out to that rebounder I go. And I may be out there multiple times a day for just a few minutes, sometimes 15. It really does refresh me, and I can come back in here to my office and go, okay, now I can kick it in the butt. I'm ready.
And it's partly the psychological. You've broken the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You've gotten outside. You've changed your scenery. And it's also physiological. You're oxygenating your extremities. You're bringing air in deeply. You're not doing the shallow breathing because you need the oxygen to be jumping and bouncing. And that goes into your extremities. So the old breathe, just breathe. There is a lot of wisdom and truth in that. And that's what we need to do in those times of stress or overwork or just when you need to shift your perspective. That's one reason I like coffee shop writing. When I'm in real writing mode, when I wrote You Unstuck, and that was on a pretty fast deadline because I had to turn it into a publisher, I would go literally, there'd be days where I'd block out 5 hours and I'd go to a coffee shop. I'd have one cup of coffee and then I had to switch to decaf. But as soon as I got stuck or I just, you know, it's like, ooh, I don't know where to go with this chapter or this piece, I'd get in my car and go to a different coffee shop, and I could hit three or four in one day, and I just would keep writing because it just sort of shook me up. It's like a little reboot, and I think we all need those psychological breaks, especially those of us who work online or in our home offices or in any kind of isolation, because, you know, I'm sure you've had those days where you start at 7 in the morning and then you realize, ooh, it's dark outside. Huh, I never moved.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Couple
I have
breaks.
Had many, multiple days, more than I like to admit, where I leave my office, which is at the front of the house, and I leave because my feline office assistants are literally circling me, mm-hmm. and they're eyeing me like my ankles might be yummy, so I have to leave.
Right.
And I will walk out of my office and go, oh, crud, there's not a light on in the house because I haven't budged. But,
I know
that there are those days. Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it can be fabulous, and you just, you know, you're in that as I once interviewed when I was with the Dallas Morning News, I had a column there called Traveling Hopefully, named after one of my books, and I interviewed the amazing Dr. Csikszentmihalyi, who, try that three times, who created that term, finding your flow, and he was the one who talked about flow state, flow being that sense, I just call it unitasking, where you're really focused on one thing, but flow state being that state where you sort of lose your surroundings, you lose that consciousness of what's going on in the outside world, you are both absorbed and challenged by your task, so it's not necessarily easy and mindless, it's something that gets you excited and absorbed. But it's this balance of something that is within your capabilities, and yet it's at the outside edge of them. So you feel challenged and excited, but also competent. And you get into that flow, and then you just feel like time standing still, whether it's making music,
exactly.
writing, or cooking, or bouncing. And it's a great feeling. And I think because of this excess of information, a lot of us have lost that. And
I have found
a really good thing to go back to.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'm really excited listening to this because I have a web project that I really need to get to work on. And it's been a challenge for a lot of reasons. Not many of them are too challenging. I love to build websites. This one, for some reason, has just got me stuck. And I, when we get off of this call, I am going to go sit down or, you know, go out to my rebounder, and I'm going to concentrate on getting into that. What did you call it? Unitasking?
Unitasking, yeah.
It's
one
not
thing
a term
only.
I've heard. Right, and, you know, I've actually, I had already crafted my morning to where all of my work is done, and I had intended on spending the afternoon on this, but now I'm thinking, I can actually do this. For some reason, just hearing you say that got me going, so thank you.
And a sense of, and we've got to flip that psychological switch of feeling excitement about it, not pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Yeah, it's kind of the half empty, half full. You can look at it as, oh, I got to get this done, or oh, this is going to be so great jumping into this project. It's a little bit of a
mind.
Trick of the brain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Libby, let's go back to discipline because you mentioned that a bit ago. Would you like to share some of your disciplines that get you going in the morning?
Yes. I'm not much of a morning person. I like to slide into the day. So I do know the day before what I have to tackle, and I try to look at the top three high-level activities. And for me, and sometimes, you know, they come in over the transom, and you've got to be ready for something that you didn't expect. Happily, a huge client called me yesterday with a great opportunity. Now, I hadn't expected that, but I had to stop down everything and prepare for a phone call and some documents that I had to get together. So, you know, those things come up, but I look at what's on the top list, what would fit on a Post-it, although I have a different kind of tracking system, but what are those things that would fit on a Post-it, and what's on literally on my desk, because I'm a visual person. I look at what's on my desktop, virtual desktop, my laptop, and I also look at the papers that are on my desk or the files, and I go right to what do I have to do and what can others do. And one thing that business owners and entrepreneurs and women particularly have to look at is we've got to build those support systems. And many people wait. They wait until they're in crisis or crunch mode before they think, wow, I need some help on this. And we're all guilty of that at times. I'm sitting here looking at a hard drive where I was supposed to download a whole chunk of video and really thought, you know, I don't really know how to do that properly. And it was only after I thought, oh, gosh, what if I lost this chunk that I can't afford to lose? I better call my web and IT guru and get him over here today, which I did. He's coming this afternoon. So we've got a plan for what is it that only I can do? And sometimes we've got to do the task that, you know, we don't really want to do, the admin or the filing or the financial stuff. But building that network of people around us, and I'm not suggesting everybody needs a full staff, but, you know, those people like what you do, Denise, you've got a network of people that can solve all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And business owners tend to wait too long. We wait until we feel like we're at the bottom of this huge pile of paperwork or stuff. So that's the first thing to get back to your question. How do I start? I look at the high-level activities that have to happen today. And that's where I start. And then I keep a running list. And I keep an annual project list. It's like, what's going to happen in 2016? And then I back it out into quarters. And if anybody that's listening wants my worksheet for that, I'm happy to send it to them. Just shoot me an email at libby@libbygill.com, because I find this to be a really effective worksheet. I'm not particularly a linear thinker, but I've got to capture that. What do I want to make happen this year? And then how do I break that into quarters? How do I break that into months? How do I break that into weeks? And then how do I break that into days? And that's the only way I make things happen. And I tend to look at things in 1 year. I don't set resolutions. I don't do any of that. I'm a big goal setter. But I know how hard it is to get a big project underway. And I'm forever telling people that I coach, it will take more time and cost more money than you plan on. So 3X it right now and just live with that for a while and expect that to happen. If it comes in under that, great. But expect it not to happen as quickly as you want. So now you're reminding me, I thought about this online course, you know, years ago. Finally decided 2015, midway through the year, was when, not even midway, it probably quarter two of last year, I started researching learning systems, different modalities, how people really like to learn, what's the latest data on learning systems and styles, and then platforms. And I had a lot of content already that I knew I would want to load into that, but I found the system and built the online academy and thought, well, gee, I'll be able to just kick that off in September. And lo and behold, you know, it was March, and that was okay. I actually still got in under my one-year plan. But it took that long to do it right. I don't want to do things halfway. I'm not quite the perfectionist you are. I have kind of gotten over that because I find I can move faster. I'm more agile if I don't hold myself to that. And, you know, every now and then I can live with a typo, which in my corporate days would make me cringe. Oh, my gosh, I'm guilty of a typo. You know, now I've learned the world will not stop, and people understand. And, yes, sometimes it really matters, and other times it's in a casual email, I'll just live with it. I mean, as you said, you had your mouse crisis yesterday, and you just kind of had to live with it.
Well, I cursed at it, and I said bad words, right. And I might have wept a bit, but yeah, we got through it. But you're right, and the perfectionism thing, I am working on it. It's difficult. This is a lifelong thing. But you're right. And, you know, I have to counsel myself pretty much daily, although it's not as much as it used to be. It's like, Denise, it's okay. Launch this, finish this, send this off to wherever it needs to go, and move on to the next thing. And by getting in that habit, I'm getting much, much better. But listen, Libby, I'm one of those people that used to take a Q-tip to the area around my faucet. I mean, I'm a perfectionist. But I'm better. I'm better. I am. I'm much better now.
Well, it starts with awareness, and you're aware of it, and you're aware that you have to remind yourself every day. Let it go. Move on.
Yeah. And, I mean, life is much easier, and I do still manage to get a ton of work done, but then that little voice goes, well, you could get more done if you would just stop being such an idiot. So,
you
don't want to call yourself an idiot.
You must exhaust yourself.
I'm getting better about it. I really am. And I'm actually a very happy person, and I'm not OCD or any of those things. I just like to do things right.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand it. I mean, there are things that demand, if you can't hit perfection, as close as you can possibly get mm-hmm. to it, a high level of excellence and quality. And that's another thing I think in some ways the online world has given us is this kind of loose, casual, sloppy informality that
yeah.
I'm not always a fan of.
There's a lot of it that I truly don't understand. I mean, I get resumes from, you know, people who think that the virtual assistance industry is where they should be. Libby, they're in text speak.
Yeah.
I kid you not.
Yeah,
they go straight in the trash. I don't even do them the courtesy of responding. It's just, I can't.
I know. I understand that. Or they have, you know, the old your name spelled wrong. I was watching the Today Show this morning. There was a typo in something they put up on their own graphic, and it just made me cringe. Don't you folks know your punctuation? And I said, oh, no, that's bad. I once corrected my son's third-grade teacher on an ongoing issue in their third-grade newsletter, and my son was not happy with me, and I said, I'm sorry, she should know better. I've curbed
myself
since those
days. On Facebook, Lou Dobbs puts, you know, all kinds of graphics up, and I finally couldn't stand it. I sent them off a notice. Do you have anybody who actually checks these things before you put them out? I mean, come on. And
yeah.
I think they got a bit better about it. But, okay, so let's talk about professional acceleration because and really I'd like to talk about women today because women really kind of, I mean, we do great work. We do. We multitask when we probably shouldn't. But let's face it, I mean, we're doing an awful lot of things behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, maybe other people, men, are not necessarily doing. And I don't mean that to sound sexist at all. It's just what we do. It's how we're raised.
It's a fact.
So it is a fact. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, why we do it, I don't know. We have to. You know, we want a clean home. We want to be able to provide, you know, good hot meals for our families. It's what we do. We nurture. We take care of things. So what are some of the secrets that women can use to, you know, maybe take all of this bundle of things that we do and make it work at the end of the day, and at the end of the month, and the end of the year?
Well, one thing, I'm a big believer in structure and accountability. I think when we are left to our own devices, we often slip back into our old ways and our old habits. And if we want to try something bold or new, we've got to get enough small wins under our belt that we can see, oh, this can work, I can do this, I can make this happen. And the best thing, and I didn't know this at the time, but when I left the corporate world, and, you know, I had a great run in the entertainment world. I was just, you know, I just kind of done it all. There was nothing else that really excited me and nowhere, honestly, nowhere to go. And so I thought, you know, what I truly loved was nurturing my team. I always had a young staff of, you know, green kinds of young green kids, and it was my job to turn them into superstars, and that was the most fun. It was a natural leap into coaching. But what I looked at when I made that career switch is, what's going to hold me accountable to these changes? It's really scary. I'm venturing into a new world, and I was in my late 40s by then when I started all over, left the corporate world, published my first book, started my coaching consulting business, left my marriage at the same time, bought a house on my own, you know, really started, lost 30 pounds, everything changed in my life. And there was a friend who was a professional friend and at the time was also going through a number of changes, and we just decided, well, every morning, and that's, I was also consulting on the Dr. Phil show, which I did after I left the corporate world, and that was a big job. I was the first one hired on that show. He was still on Oprah, to kind of establish the brand and figure out where we were going to go strategically with that. And it was a big undertaking, and it was all a new business for me. So there was no comfort in, hey, I can pull this one off the shelf. I've already done this before. Everything was new. And so this friend and I began to do a morning check-in. And every morning, about 8 o'clock, as we were both heading to our offices, we would do a, what's on your plate today? What are you dealing with? What are you scared of? What's going to hold you to making things happen? How can I help you? And these calls became sacrosanct. That happened all the time. And then I discovered, well, what do you know? People call this an accountability partner. And then as my coaching practice developed, I made that, you know, that's what I do as a coach. I sometimes think I'm a professional nag, is I will find multiple ways to hold people accountable. And first you've got to know accountable to what. And I start with, there are three things for me. It's you clarify the vision. And that's what worked for me. Where do I want to be in a year? I can't really think 5 years out. I mean, I can in fantasy, but in how can I make things happen, I think about 18 months ahead of time. And I plan on paper a year ahead of time. And that is that vision. The same way I formed a course, the same way I built the coaching business, the same way I did my first speech or wrote my first book. And my first book, I bought a book off of Amazon on how to write a book proposal, and I spent a year writing as good a proposal as I could. And fortunate, I sold it and with multiple offers. It was a long time writing it, and it was a quick sale. But all of those things happen by having that vision. And next is to simplify the pathway, and I think that's simplifying is critical for women. We do have complicated lives. We are generally, more often than men, we are the caretakers of homes, of children, of elders, of siblings, of all kinds of things in addition to our own businesses. So how do you make things easier and not more complicated for yourself? Is it a support system? Is it networking? Is it planning for things like, I have to plan de-stressors, deep massage, yoga class, I got to put those on the calendar or something will eat that up. So you've got to find ways to simplify the path, bring in resources, get rid of things that you know don't work or are time wasters. And then you've got to execute. Then you've got to put that plan into action. And by having, and it's still today, I have an accountability partner, not the same person. It's changed over 16 years now. I've been in business for myself. It's changed a couple of times. I've had three different partners, and now it's once a week. But it's still having somebody say, hey, well, why'd you send an email instead of picking up the phone? That was kind of chicken. You know, why did you undervalue? Why did you undercharge? Right. Why didn't you think that through? And it's done with love and affection. But, you know, I want someone hard-hitting on the other side of that call, as I am for my partner. So to me, having that structure, it's not the, hey, kind of loosey-goosey, can I chat for a minute? It's, no, every week we're going to do a structured call, half an hour max. We'll talk about you. We'll talk about me. We're going to talk about high-level needs and how I could get you there faster with more grace and ease and with greater greater joy.
Well, I think I love this idea, and I'm right. I'm scribbling. I had to shove the cat. He's not happy, and I'm scribbling all this down, even though I'll go back and listen and make notes for a post about this. But I'm going through my head right now. It's like, oh, my gosh, who can I get to be my accountability partner? And I've got 10 names. They're just popping up like crazy. I love that idea. I absolutely love that idea, and thank you for that.
Oh, it's life-changing. It's life-changing. It's someone who says, Denise, let go of that. Why were you such a perfectionist about something that ultimately didn't matter when 90% was fine? And hearing it in other words from someone else coming at you, and not just that, but anything, is you're nurturing an idea, and dreams can be very fragile. You don't want to share those with everyone. And I used to coach a lot of young folks, and I would say, I still do a lot of millennials who I love working with, and even kids in college, and I would say, you don't have to tell your parents everything, or jokingly, lie to your parents or lie to your boss, which I didn't mean. That was always in quotes. But it was, don't share all of those dreams prematurely. There are plenty of people out there who are just going to stomp on them. So you have to be very careful about being thoughtful about who you tap for support, who you turn to, and how you protect your ideas. And I don't mean protect. I'm all about sharing, you know, tools and tips and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, sometimes new entrepreneurs will think, well, I can't put that out there on my website to give away. People will just, you know, take advantage. I said, no, they won't. They'll think, wow, if she's giving that away, imagine what I'm going to get if I hire her. That's what people really think. And it's also
the rule.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The rule of thumb basically is give away your best stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you have faith in your work and your content and your creativity, you know there's always more where that came from. Wherever it came from, there's more. Another thing I think women can do, if aside from the accountability partner, which is can be ongoing, and I think it should be structured and built, and maybe you have a mastermind group or a let's get everybody together around the table with a glass of wine or virtually or however you do that. But there's another thing that I did not create this. I learned this from an attorney who learned it from a judge who called it the art of the small favor. And that is when there is something you need, ask for that small favor. And the data shows us that men typically network for a specific reason. They want a contact, they want a reference, they want a promotion, and they will network with something in mind, where women tend to network for friendship or business friendship or just that sense of connection. And there's nothing wrong with that, obviously, but we don't always ask for what we need. So this little magic phrase is that the small favor. So you say, hey, I wanted to renew a coaching relationship where my key connection had left. It was someone in the HR department at a big media company. That person had moved on. Great, I'll move on with her, but there goes my connection. So I went to someone I had worked with directly at that company and said, hey, I have a small favor. I'd like to reconnect with someone in your that deals with external coaches. Could you connect me? Small favor, which meant not going to be a ton of your time needed, not going to be something that is undoable or that I'm over asking beyond the scope of our relationship. It's just a small favor. And that person said, oh, absolutely, no problem, and then made the connection. So we need to look at things where we need something that is beyond our reach. It could be a connection we need. It could be a tool that we need. It could be an introduction, whatever that is, and then ask for it. So many people, and sometimes when I speak to a group, I'll say, you know, how do you feel when somebody approaches you and says, hey, I just love your thoughts on something, or I'd love that connection, or I love how you handled this. I'd love to hear more about it. How many people feel great about that? And every hand goes up. You know, a room full of people, every hand goes up. And I'll say, man, just leave your hands up for a minute. Now, how do you feel when you go to somebody or you want to go to someone and say, hey, I need some help, I need an introduction, I need a favor, does that feel good to you? And every hand goes down. I say, well, wait a minute, look at the disconnect there. We feel good when we're able to help and offer something, some wisdom or some sort of connection, something to someone else, but we feel bad or scared or ashamed when we need help. What's that about? When we think of it as, we are asking for something that is infinitely doable, it usually makes people feel pretty darn good when they can give us that favor. So ask, pick up the phone, shoot the email, go knock on somebody's cubicle and ask for what you want and need. Chances are you'll get it.
You know, I've always said that entrepreneurs in particular are the most generous people on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there are very few of us who are not approachable. And who won't be, you know, who will say, well, no, I'm not going to do that. That's a conflict. We're more than likely going to do our level best to help you out.
Well, I think to be an entrepreneur, first of all, we've had the hard knocks of our own. We know how difficult it is getting there, wherever there is. But we also, most of us have a sense of abundance. We think the world is infinite and the possibilities are out there. So sharing something, even if the other person is technically a competitor, it's only going to be to our own benefit. It's going to come back around in that karmic way that things do. And I think entrepreneurs have often learned that lesson.
Absolutely. We have James Artrees in the chat room, and going back to what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, he says, I'm glad I'm not a woman. Bless your heart, James. It seems that the society we now live in is pushing women too much to be perhaps something that maybe they shouldn't be. In other words, just as good as a man. What do you think about that?
I appreciate the thoughts. And I do think that by having lots of choices, it can be a scary world. And I don't think the choices are the same for everyone. I mean, part of our courage has to be, hey, I want to be a stay-at-home mom, not just for a few years, but for always, and to have the freedom to make that choice. But one thing, and I think this is why James is commiserating with us, is the data does show that there are more men in senior positions. There are more women in the workforce, but there are a lot more men in leadership and management than there are women. And there are plenty of women who want to be there, and they should have that opportunity and that choice. And I actually think that is both institutional and individual. I think because the workplace, particularly the corporate workplace, tends to be less caring and less forgiving about personal needs, whether that's family, illness, our own health and balance, that we have to find ways to make that, and women more often make the sacrifices. And that's just numbers, and we've got 25 years of good data from places like Catalyst.org that tell us this. But I don't think women should be forced into doing what they don't want or what's not right for them. But the reality of the workplace is that so many people have to earn, most of us have to earn a living. And if in a family, most of us need two incomes. And that's just where we are. But we hear a lot about women working their way into leadership. I think the focus and the care and support should be for women who are in hourly wage positions, low earning positions, because they often make less money, they have fewer choices, and when their schedule gets thrown by a sick kid or an illness themselves or some sort of need, they don't have the freedom or the flexibility to say, hey, I'm taking a sick day, I'm going to be at home today. And it can be very scary when something enters their world that they don't have control over. I mean, one family illness can throw somebody into bankruptcy. And I think we need to look at the support for everyone in terms of things like, you know, daycare, healthcare, all of those issues where we need those social systems. And if they don't exist, we need to find and build our own networks where we can create that safety net for ourselves.
Well, it used to be, and not all that long ago, not that many decades ago, that, you know, your family helped out, your friends and your neighbors helped out, barn building, you know, health care, child care. That doesn't seem to be the norm anymore, and I find that sad. So building that personal network back up I think is really good advice.
I think so, too. I had a friend I worked with for years who had the three-level kind of brownstone. Nothing fancy, but grandma lived on the top floor, the family lived on the second floor, and they rented out the bottom floor, and that was just the way people lived. You know, in agrarian societies, we live like that. But, yes, those are things of the past, and I think we have to think in those terms. How do we build that? How do we build the babysitting support system or the familial support, the internships where we've got people to come in and work with us where we're training them and we've got that sort of bottom layer covered? You have to get pretty creative nowadays, but it's doable.
Oh, absolutely. And that leads me back to one of my questions. We're going to go back again a bit. You're telling me so many neat things. I'm scribbling like crazy. When people get to critical mass when they're building their business and, you know, all of a sudden they need help, whether it's help with, you know, childcare or help with maybe they need a virtual assistant or a web developer. But here's the thing that we're going to hear more and more often now with the economy really not doing so well. And there's just so many things going on in the background. But one thing that I hear an awful lot from people that I'm either coaching or mentoring is they'll say, oh, I put together this great package for my new client and spent a lot of time on the phone with them, and now they tell me they can't afford me. And I think that's going to be more the norm, which worries me quite a bit. So what do you tell people who are building, you know, trying to build their team, trying to build their network, trying to get off of being stuck, in other words? What do you tell them about making those critical choices, about bringing on help and finding the wherewithal to make that happen? Because as women, I do this, I'm guilty, I think I can do it all on my own. And a lot of it I can. Should I? No.
Right.
I absolutely should not. And that was a lesson learned a long time ago.
It's looking at things that other people do better than you can do them or more cost and time efficiently. and where your highest value is, because if you farm out things from your, you know, I'm forever sending people to places like Angie's List, go get a handyman, go get, you know, drop your laundry off and get that done. You don't need to spend time on that. I've worked with a single mom who's in a new leadership position and finding herself just, you know, rocked with responsibilities at work and at home. I said, wait a minute, I know money is tight, but can you drop your laundry off? Can you get a cleaning person in one day a week or maybe one day a month to alleviate some of that? And look at those places where spending a little bit will free you up a lot. And for entrepreneurs, we've got to focus on, yes, we're managing the business, but yes, can a virtual assistant handle so much of your administrative work, and you can keep it to a level where you're really focusing on what needs to happen. It's not, you know, carte blanche, I'm going to put you on full time, but maybe you hire somebody 10 or 20 hours a week, and they know exactly what they need to run with, and suddenly you're doing more prospecting, you're meeting more clients, you're getting more proposals out. You've got to plant a lot of seeds as an entrepreneur. You don't know what's going to spring up, and you don't know when. So I really, and sometimes people get mired in the minutiae, and they forget your job is to be out there marketing and meeting people and in sales and, of course, servicing the needs of your clients. That always comes first. I mean, to me, you got to take care of the people that have already paid you and they're on board. But job number two is finding more of those people. Job number three is managing your paperwork in your office. And if someone can do that in 5 or 10 hours a week, money well spent. And people find very quickly that the return on that investment is usually pretty high, particularly if you've got great qualified people like you have on board. You want somebody who can really rock it for you, that knows social media and invoicing and all of those things. I mean, one thing I never do, and I travel a lot, is I've got the world's greatest executive assistant, Rachel, who my clients all know. It's like, yeah, ask Rachel. And she handles all my travel. I have literally ended up at the airport on the wrong day at the wrong terminal when I don't have one of her itineraries in my hand. She can book it, plan it, spend less and send me the paperwork I need to go where I need. I don't spend time thinking about that anymore. And it's funny because people will always say to me, even socially, oh, where are you going next? And I'll think, I don't know. I'll go wherever Rachel tells me I'm booked next. And, you know, I sort of know Dallas is coming up or Denver's coming up or that kind of thing. But I don't even think about it anymore. And so, I think that's where entrepreneurs need to get.
Absolutely. And it can be tricky because, I mean, if you're looking, and here's the thing with virtual assistants. I mean, you mentioned something very, very important. If you can find somebody, and you should find somebody who is very competent, and
yeah,
they can do a lot of the things that you can do, but they can do it better, quicker, far more efficiently. And this is why I don't suggest that if you really are an on-the-go entrepreneur, you don't want to hire a newbie. You just don't.
Yeah,
you don't have time to train them. You don't have time to figure out what they know or don't know. You really do need to pay the extra money to get somebody who can just walk in and seamlessly take over. So that's my little diatribe. But the thing is, my thinking has always been, if you need it bad enough, or if, you know, was Simon Sinek, I never can pronounce his name, his book is, you know, about the why.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, if your why is big enough, you're going to find a way. Cut off cable. Quit driving as much. Don't go to Starbucks. I mean, you're going to find it if you truly need it. Isn't that true?
Yeah. Oh, Denise, my first book, which is not even on my website anymore because when I started, I had no idea what the journey was I was on, but it was about stay-at-home dads. It was the first book written about women as primary breadwinners while men were home taking care of kids. And there were families that I cited, including how they did the math on how can we live on one income, because it was that important to them. I was one of those people. I happened to be the breadwinner. My husband stayed home and raised the kids when they were little. And other families did things like, you know, I had a great studio job. We didn't have to cut so many corners, but there were people that downsized their house, that used one car. I mean, things that we think today, oh my gosh, you can't have one car. Well, you actually can. You have to figure it out and you have to make some sacrifices. But yes, you have to look at what's important. And the same goes for time. I've gotten people to give up TV, their golf game, not to take pleasure out of your life, but to say, hey, am I investing too much time over here when, in fact, I should be putting it over here? And that doesn't mean don't take your daily run or don't go to the theater, don't do the things you enjoy, but look at time spent and maybe you say, hey, for 3 months, I'm going to really focus down on this. And as you said, I'm going to stop Starbucks. By the way, despite all those coffee shops that I write in, when I'm not doing that, I'm home drinking a cup of coffee. I don't want to spend $5 on a cup of coffee outside my house. It just seems silly to me.
No kidding.
So there are things we can do, but sometimes we just sort of sleepwalk through these things, and it's really about awareness. You've got to look at where you are and what you're focusing on.
Well, you know,
and Denise, can I throw out a really fun thing for your listeners?
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. You know, we only have a few more minutes. You have got to come back soon. Okay.
Oh.
And I wanted
well, you
to
and
ask
I could
you
talk
too.
Forever. imagine if we were sitting in the same room. Frightening.
I'm telling you.
Yep.
It'd be fun.
But I've got this fun quiz for people, entrepreneurs and executives, and it's called yourcareerquiz.com, and it's one of those little awareness tools. It's just you just put that in the URL, yourcareerquiz.com, and it's an assessment tool where you look at what's working and what's not, and it's going to give you instant feedback. And I've got all kinds. It's really fun, and it's set up, as you know, you set up autoresponders. I'm not going to respond live to every person, but a number of people that do respond, I get on the phone with, and it just gives you instant feedback on, whoa, did I say that? Did I really mean that? Is that working? That's not working. And am I really stuck? And I give people really fun bonuses. There's a chapter of You Unstuck, and there are some quizzes and things that you get in response to that. And it really is that first step of you got to start with awareness. And to me, that's the gift of awareness. And then you decide, now I see it. Now I've got some objective feedback. Now what do I do? And that's the big journey. Now what do I do next with that awareness?
And that is so important because, and I've said this all my life, you cannot hit a target you can't see.
Exactly.
Whether it's on your whiteboard or it's in your journal or it's on a sticky note, you've got to be able to see it, visualize it, dream it, breathe it into being. But you can't hit it if it just keeps wandering away. Okay,
yeah.
So you've got something brand new for professionals. What's that?
I do. I have this course. I'm so excited about it. And it's really the best. It's what I spent all last year working on. And it is a combination of live coaching by me in a small group situation and also the best of online learning. So there's audio and video and downloadable tools, these action guides where people really interact. And my next course is starting in June, and if people want information about it, they should just go sign up for my newsletter at libbygill.com, and that way they're going to get into some great webinars and they can also take my career quiz, and it's just a great way to get into my network, and they'll find out about this. And for your listeners, they can also just email me at libby@libbygill.com, and I'm going to give them a great bonus, I mean a third off of this quiz, $1,000 off. Not the quiz. Quiz is totally free, but off of the course. And it's going to be starting in the end of June, and I'll have information coming out about it soon. And it's really exciting, and I just ran my first course, and people made in 8 weeks. They hit some amazing milestones. It was all about identifying what you want and accelerating the path to get there.
I love that, and thank you for offering that to my audience. That I really appreciate that. I didn't know
yeah.
you were going to do that.
I didn't know I was either, but I'm going to. And I've got some webinars coming up where I thought about, hey, I'm going to just give people who are really ready to take action a significant, like, it's a no-brainer kind of bonus. So they'll get more information about that, and they can find me multiple ways, through your information and on my website, or just if they're listening, just email me and say, I want more info. I heard you on Denise's podcast.
Listen, we need to chat as soon as we get off of this or later today or Monday or something. When you're ready to start promoting that, let me know, and I will get it out to my audience.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, they would too. Trust me.
Love that.
Libby,
I had entrepreneurs and executives. Thank you, Denise. You're always such an inspiration, and I just love talking to you.
Same here, and I definitely want you to come back. So, listen, thank you so much for being with me here today. It's been wonderful catching up with you again, And I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways and the examples as much as I did. You rock the house, trust me.
So, my pleasure. Thank you.
Sure. Everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Libby Gill, and email her. Get everything that she mentioned at the top of the show, and just now, be sure you email her. Everybody, have a great weekend. I will see you next week. Libby, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.